Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You're very welcome to this week's Farmers Journal Tech Talks. I'm Justin McCarthy, and I'm standing in this week for Jack Kennedy, who is on a well-earned break. Delighted to be joined by Darren Carty, our Sheep and Schemes editor, and Adam Woods, our Beef and Suckler editor. Certainly plenty to talk about this week, ladies and gentlemen. Before we do, just to acknowledge our sponsors, Ornua, European Milk Forum, and Grassland Agro. Darren and Adam, I have a few quick fire questions. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can send us in your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or text us or WhatsApp us on 086 836 6465. Few questions in this week. Darren, one for you and possibly for you, Adam, you can come in as well on calf prices and the feasibility of dairy beef systems. Question here. What is the actual value of dairy beef calves and what can a farmer afford to pay for them? Adam, Darren, whoever wants to take that one up.
Justin. Yeah, it's chicken and egg, Justin, I suppose, in terms of where we are with calf. Like, this comes up every spring. I suppose if we go back to last spring, we stepped out of the market on Thrive for a month or 6 weeks because we thought the calf market was too hot, but it didn't come back an awful lot. And sometimes farmers are their own worst enemies. We'll talk about this later in terms of winter finishing, that we go out and we pay big money for calves and yet the margin isn't in them. And maybe your caller is right or your contributor is right in terms of we need to send messages back to dairy farmers that these calves won't get sold unless they're of, you know, good beef merit. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, farmers are out there buying those calves anyway. So yeah, it's a very valid point.
Yeah, and this farmer I'm just looking was actually watching your Thrive video back, Adam, as well. He's just here saying, why would dairy farmers even consider improving the quality of their calf when they're paying top dollar for bad cows? It's a good point.
Yeah, and we would have looked at this budget in the past. Well, this year is a little bit different, Justin, in that we're at a more positive beef price. But if we were back at 370, 380, you know, of a base price, you're looking at 100 euros there probably for a calf, and we're probably closer to 200 euros for a calf in that system. So, yes, it needs to correct itself there. And look, at the market needs to dictate that. Definitely for a premium for good calves, you may say that, you know, for high genetic merit beef calves, that there is a premium in them, and you'd like to see them making good money. But for the poorer calves, you'd like to see them not making as much.
Again, Adam, Darren, I'll throw it to the both of you, and I should give Aidan Brennan's apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Aidan is touring farms in the UK at the minute. No doubt we'll have his report on those farms in the coming weeks in the Farmers Journal. But just one here, guys, on contract rearing, just what farmers should be charging and what format those contracts take.
Yes, I suppose, Justin, I was out on a farm actually this week, a sheep farm who was also contract reared, and the way he's working is 130 a day is the payment that he's getting. He has a bonus built in if he hits certain weight targets. The farmer, say, who owns the calf is providing the medical treatments for the animal. So he's 130 a day. He has to cover, say, his grass management, his fertilizer, his, I suppose, any costs he has in holding them calves. And that averages out over say the spring, summer and the winter period, if any concentrates are coming in during the winter, the farmer who owns the calves are paying for them as well. Adam, I suppose that's on a dairy heifer side. I don't know whether it's any different on the few farms that are doing the bull calves for the Chagas program at the moment.
No, I think it's pretty similar, Darren. I suppose the one add that I'd have to that is people often think when you're at Suckland that everything else is better and contract rearing is great here. We'll get money in every month. The very good fellas or the very good farmers will get on very, very well at contract rearing because they'll be able to do a good job and they'll have a large amount of grass in the system and they'll hit their weight targets. If you're not, we'll say, really good at grassland management, you won't get on well at contract rearing on you. And if you're not in a real level of detail in terms of hitting target weights and good performance and good management, there's no fortune in contract rearing. You'll be out money.
Adam, we're obviously going to come back to that a bit later on. I want to pick up on some of the articles you have in this week's paper, particularly in relation to the break-even price for winter finishing and obviously the whole dairy beef thing. It's pretty hot this week. Before, just staying with the questions from our listeners, Darren, probably one for you. I bought lambs last year due to the beam stocking rate reductions, and I am embarrassed to say they left more per head than my finishing cattle. Certainly a better return on investment anyway, Darren. Cattle have done much better this year, all right, but I cannot see at current prices how winter finishing will work again. I've oceans of grass and I'm thinking of buying light store lambs with a view to finishing them in the first quarter of 2022. I've a straw bedded shed which I can use if needed. My question is, does Darren think the trade will be good next spring? So Darren, no pressure.
No, just look, I suppose it's a tricky one and that's something that crops up every year. And the experience I'd use is if we went back to 2018, we were coming into 2019 with fewer lambs on the ground. Everyone thought the trade would trump the real good trade of, say, in the springtime, but yet it materialised. And I think a lot of what dictated is how consumers respond or say, how markets respond over the next few months. And I was talking to a couple of the processors this week just around what signals they're getting, say, around demand. And particularly high-value markets, Germany, Belgium, some of the Nordic countries. And they're seeing, the signals they're getting back is this sales may not be as strong as what they were, say, during COVID or at the start of COVID, but they don't envisage it's going to drop back to a level pre-COVID. The cheap meat was one of the, I suppose, maybe the proteins that really benefited from people having more disposable income in some of them countries when they weren't going out, spending it, going on holidays, that type of thing. It'll just, I suppose, be interesting to see how that settles back as the country starts to open up. But I don't think, Justin, we're going to go back to a level of consumption falling back to pre-COVID levels, but we just need to be cautious. And look, we're going to talk on winter finishing budgets. I think for that farmer, let him do a budget because the store lamb trade is very hot at the moment. If he's buying them lighter lambs, he may be as well to keep out of it for 2 or 3 weeks until the market settles, if he's buying a longer keep lamb. But just to buy a lamb that suits his system and this, he can put some daylight in it. I do think the trade will be good next spring, but just with a word of caution.
Thanks for that, Darren. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can email us your questions on farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or by text message or WhatsApp to 086 836 6465. Darren, I want to stay on the sheep side because a bit of good news this week, and unfortunately good news is pretty thin on the ground in the journal this week, but some good news was certainly on the sheep side in relation to access to China.
Yeah, Justin, it is great news. And look, it's not over the line yet. It'll be a few months. But I think any progress on it has to be welcomed, given that we're years waiting for this development. If I go back to Borbia meat seminars, I think 5 or 6 years ago, we brought it up first that there would be access or movement and access to China and the US. Look, there still needs to be work done in the US, but at least we're getting some access into China. And I think the one thing for me or what I look at is the, I suppose, the influence that China has had on New Zealand and Australia. And like the figures are hard to comprehend. We don't talk about China as big on the sheep meat sector globally. We talk about New Zealand, we talk about Australia because of exports. But if we look at the consumption in China, like they're producing 4.5 million tons of sheep meat. Like that's phenomenal figures. It's the highest sheep flock in the world, 315 million ewes. Production is increasing, but it's still not increasing at a rate good enough to match consumption. If we look at, say, the import requirement in the last 10 years has gone from 50,000 tons, so a little lower than what Ireland exports, to 500,000 tons of sheep meat is what is predicted to where it sort of settle at. Like, that's phenomenal, phenomenal figures. It now takes 50% of New Zealand's sheep meat exports, which we have benefited from enormously from less EU, I say New Zealand sheep meat coming into the EU. It takes 38% of Australia's sheep meat exports, which is massive as well. And look, at even if we're not talking about, it's not going to transform our exports. We're not going to be talking about 40 to 50% of our exports going to China. But what it'll do, it'll give a lot better carcass balance. So I suppose the one thing we've been missing is that we have good markets, high value markets for, say, loin cuts, for legs, for your higher value cuts. This is going to give an awful lot better balance for, you say, your neck cuts, your brisket, your flaps, all of that side of things, your core product as well. And I think that has to be something that we have to look forward to. The one thing, Justin, I suppose, the only little cloud or the negative on it is that a lot of the processors would say to really maximize or to optimize the Chinese market, we need access again with beef, because we can go to dual offering, we can dilute the cost of exporting products, we can go to the same customer and say, well, we have high quality beef, high quality lamb. Look, I don't know whether that's something that Adam wants to mention on, but 15 months is a long time to be out.
Adam, why are we still out? We've been out, as Darren says, 15 months. Any movement there? Any suggestion?
Yeah, we've asked the department on this a couple of times at this stage, Justin. Very, very frustrating. Obviously, that was a growing market. You had Donegal Meats. We had made some inroads into that market and other factories as well. The Irish government has told us it's at diplomatic level. They assured us that all checks, everything has been completed from their end and there is nothing else they can do. It's completely with the Chinese authorities. But you have to question, is there an impetus within the Irish government to really, get that market open again? We're losing ground. The Chinese market is growing all the time for beef products. Industry sources would suggest that they're changing over to beef from pork, and that will stick. It's a lost opportunity, a big lost opportunity.
The problem is that Chinese market is so volatile. I just see pig prices have really come under pressure in China now recently, and they ebb and flow as they change their buying patterns. And look, I hear you in terms of what you're saying about the Irish government, but China is a diplomatic force all of its own, and it can make decisions for reasons far outside the farm gate, unfortunately. But it does present a real challenge, and certainly, and we will come back to it later on, Adam, on the whole beef market side. We're going to need all the opportunities for beef that we can get next spring. But maybe staying a little bit more inside the farm gate and with you on that, it was mentioned there, and I was just looking at the grass growth figures in this week's Farmers Journal. Not only is growth good, but utilization is very good. Ground's dry, bit of heat, bit of kindness as well. What are we going to do with all this extra grass?
Yeah, Justin, it's phenomenal at the moment. And like talking to a few fellas this week, they said they never were in a better position, and are just praying that the rain doesn't come, because utilization is going to be the challenge. It's a great position to be in. Like, we have oceans of grass. Some farmers are maybe putting a bit more, I suppose, maybe merit into what the feeding power of grass is there. Or one of the things we're seeing a good bit coming back through is poor kill outs and lambs. That just because you have oceans of grass there doesn't mean they have to eat the last centimetre that's there. And I think that's the message at the moment, is particularly on the store finishing lambs, is that there's some very high covers, Justin, like there's covers over 2,000 kilos dry matter. And that's grand if lambs go in and they're only expected to eat the first, I suppose, maybe a few centimetres off it, and then you can come in along with yours or that. And if you have a lot of lambs gone out, the last thing you want as well is to be letting in yours, let them clip off the nice sort of grass that's there, and then forcing them coming into breeding to eat the lower value stuff. Now, look, at quality will hold, and will hold better this time of the year. And for a lot of people, the fact that there was drought and there was tight grass supplies, in general, there is some swards at better quality than what would be at this time of the year. But I think farmers just need to be careful around the management. We may be splitting up paddocks. If they are bringing in maybe yours to graze off, them say maybe, I suppose, bigger areas, the way that you can, I suppose, force them to take a bit of pain for a few days, as long as they're going to quickly regain that if you're moving them into fresh grass. But I think, look, at the store lamb one, I think is the biggest message, is that don't be expecting them to come in and clean off paddocks altogether. or you will depress performance. And maybe, Justin, if, say, utilization does suffer a bit and we do get a lot of rain, there is a lot of rain forecasted in the West for next week. Hopefully that will change and it won't come. But then for the likes of Am Lambs is not being afraid to use meals strategically. It is a higher cost. We are seeing it go up. But where lamb prices are at, there is still a good return on investment in bringing in. It doesn't have to be a lot. Like, we're feeding 0.4, 0.5 a kilo on Tullamore Farm, and that's a dry farm. And we're still getting, I suppose, maybe a huge benefit from that in regards to slaughter performance and in keeping them ram lambs moving.
Adam, Darren mentioned Tullamore and the sheep side. Just give us a quick update there. What's happening on the suckler side?
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet down there the last couple of weeks, Justin. We're building grass covers. Grass has been really, really super in September. We've been growing 60 kilos, which is about 30 kilos ahead of demand, which is around 31 kilos a day. We need that for all of Darren's sheep that's coming along now for breeding. But we've done the beep sampling, the fecal sampling. They came back clear. We've weighed the calves as well over the last couple of weeks, and we've started to just about to start to wean down there. And look at everything going pretty good. September, it's so important on a beef farm and probably on a sheep farm as well to have a good September, because it really shortens the winter. Like, we're looking at housing now well into October at this stage, because we've really good grass supplies ahead of us.
Spoken like a true beef editor. It's very quiet down there. I'm sure Sean Diver would agree with you. He must be sitting sunning himself, isn't he, Adam? Adam, one place that's not very quiet is in the whole world of dairy beef at the minute. And take us through that. You have extensive coverage in this week's paper of, I suppose, maybe not to be too dramatic, but the fallout of comments made by Professor Gerry Boyle over the weekend in relation to, I suppose, a migration from suckling towards dairy beef systems.
Yeah, look, at I guess if we cast ourselves back to last week, Gerry Boyle was speaking at a Dublin Economics Workshop in Dublin. Probably wasn't a lot of farmer listeners coming into that, but at that workshop, he said, and I quote, "We are strongly advocating." This was based on a question he got on alternatives that farms could employ in relation to climate change and how we could meet climate change targets. And he said, "We are strongly advocating, based on research, that we shift from beef cow production to what we call dairy beef production, and that would be a massive change." And those comments have really echoed through the beef end of the house and the suckler end of the house over the last few days. A lot of farmers very angered at those
comments. Is that not fine if he's basing his recommendations on research? If the research shows that there's more money in the system, that should be okay.
Yeah, it's questionable, Justin. And look, there's questions there in this week's paper in relation to what research he's referring to there, because sometimes when chuggers look at this research, they look at research from I guess research centres that are growing maybe 10, 12, 15 tonne of grass to the hectare, and based it on very, very high stocking rates. But for the vast majority of farms, Justin, they don't want to go to 3 livestock units to the hectare. And for the vast majority of farms in the west of Ireland, they're not able to go to 3 livestock units to the hectare. They're not able to grow that much grass. So to compare, we'll say, very highly stocked dairy beef systems with what could be employed on farms is not fair, I guess, in making that comparison.
And Adam, that's a health warning in fairness you've always given when we've been doing Thrive demonstrations, Thrive webinars are in the paper. Like, at the end of the day, Thrive model is not replicable on a farmer on the hill in the side of Mayo that, despite doing a bloody good job, he still has a 6-month winter and probably growing 4 or 5 tons of grass dry matter. Is that where the real crux comes between maybe the image that Gerry Boyle is portraying and the research that he's relying on and the application of that research into a typical suckler farming system?
Yeah, Justin, I think, look, there's bigger questions here as well. This is the director of Chagas, advocating a switch from one system to the other. And there's a lot of suckler farmers out there very, very angered, and they're questioning the relevance of Chagas. If this is internal Chagas strategy to switch to dairy beef systems, then what relevance has Chagas to them in the future? If they're saying you need to switch to dairy beef production systems here, there's real questions to be answered there. And in terms of, Gerry Boyle is a very influential figure. The two people he was speaking to at that conference were Department Expenditure Reform and Environment, in terms of policy makers that will be, you know, advising government in the next few months as regards what way CAP will go. He also has a seat on the Climate Change Advisory Council, and what advice has been given to them based on suckler cow dynamics and what support that suckler cow needs in the next round of CAP. So there's an awful lot of questions there. I know the beef stakeholders in Grange have wrote a letter in to the board and the chairman of the board, Liam Hurley, to get get some answers because they feel that they haven't been communicated with at all on this topic.
We actually published that letter on our letters page this week. And Adam, I suppose, is that where it stems from? Do you have a fear that the comments of Gerry Boyle, like there's a big play being put on in terms of this cap reform, where or not we should go for a couple payments in our live around the editor's table debate with the minister? We put this to him and his view is that the supports for our suckling will come from Pillar 2. But obviously they're co-financed. And if you have somebody from the Department of Finance here in the professor or the director of Chagas saying that suckling, really, we should be getting out of suckling and going dairy beef, that probably makes a minister's case very difficult to actually go to the Department of Finance looking for funding for the suckler cow, for the national suckler herd.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head, Justin, in terms of, you know, the frustration that's out there now amongst suckler farmers. And I guess Gerry Boyle is looking at this from a pure economist point of view. Look at it. He wants to see the highly profitable dairy herd grow and expand. And I'm not saying it shouldn't, but that shouldn't happen at the expense of another sector. Suckler farmers deserve the right, the freedom to farm suckler cows if they want to farm suckler cows. And this has to be based on other things, we'll say, maybe other than economics. It's based on the ability, as we've said, to grow grass. And we shouldn't, we'll say, hang one section of our industry out to dry to allow another industry grow and develop on into the future. We can't just, we'll say, nail the coffin on the suckler herd and say goodbye, that's it, we're done. There's an awful lot else running on, we'll say, riding on this in terms of markets. You take our markets, Justin. We've built up markets across Europe based on our suckler herd and our high quality suckler beef. If we go to a byproduct from the dairy herd and more comes from that, I think we'll have challenges going into the future in terms of marketing that beef.
Darren, I just want to flip back to you here in relation to, we mentioned Pillar 2 and we mentioned schemes, we mentioned cap reform and whatnot. And obviously, we discussed this at length around the editor's table with the minister on Tuesday night. And ladies and gentlemen, that video is available to watch back. And as is, and I should also point out, Adam, we could talk a lot about the quality of the calf coming from the dairy herd as well. You have an extensive webinar on our farmersjournal.ie around the quality of the calf and what needs to happen there. So, ladies and gentlemen, go back and look at that. But Darren, on the scheme side of it, one of the questions I would have put to the minister, and you have extensive coverage in a special scheme supplement in this week's paper, in relation to the European Parliament have approved the rollover of the 2022 budget for the transition period. I suppose all attention now turns to government in terms of providing the co-financing.
Yeah, Justin, that's probably the biggest question we're getting at the moment is what's happening in 2022, because farmers are looking forward and they're looking at talk of fertilizer prices rising, they're looking at talk of, say, building costs rising, they're looking at concentrate costs. Like, it's all talking about increases in input costs, and they're looking for certainty around planning their systems and what finances they have actually for coming, say, into next year. And look, Minister's hands are probably tied a bit. He has said this, that he is confident in getting the scheme, say, rolled over. But, you know, we do need every scheme that's there to be co-financed to the same degree. And, like, there's a couple of real important things, Justin, or a couple of real important schemes if we look at. Like, glasses, 200 million coming into close to 50,000 farmers. That's a big chunk of money, and that's the first one probably on the table that needs to be rolled over. I'd be confident that would be, because I suppose ministers always been clear in saying that he wants to have an agri-environmental scheme in place all the time. BEEP and BEAM, BEEP and BDGP are bringing in close to 80 million to the suckler sector, and like, that needs to not only roll over to 2022, but that needs to be, I suppose, maybe form the basis of the next CAP strategic plan. And like Adam said there, the comments around that are very worrying. Outside of that, I suppose, look, payments seem to be on target for the other schemes. Like, if we look at when they're coming, like on the Tilly side, the strong corporation measure, the soundings from Andy is getting from the department is that has generally been broadly well accepted. Now, look, it's been an exceptional year and there hasn't been a lot of negatives around it in this. The fact that straw has been gotten very good yields of straw hasn't really put the focus on the straw that has been taken out of the system. There probably is a little few tweaks that need to happen, but I think you'll probably see that roll over along with the 14 aid scheme, because the protein aid scheme is becoming, I think, a real hot potato bun And I think you probably need more funding going into that, because if we're looking at all the talk around importing soya, importing protein products, like, we need to be in an area where we can expand the crops that are, I suppose, maybe falling in under that 14-aid scheme, but also giving farmers the support to be able to go and do it. Like, the other couple of ones, the sheep welfare scheme, I think that's a formality in getting that, say, rolled over. But the other, I suppose, maybe one's just in this, there's more question marks around is, what'll happen to the organic scheme? Is it going to open again? Like, that would have been very disappointing in this. Minister Pippa Haggis said that she wanted 500 farmers in it. 370 farmers came into it, and that needs to change, and there needs to be changes, I suppose, in around getting beef and sheep farmers in it, and not just, I suppose, maybe open it up for and prioritising dairy and tillage. And a big one, and this is the one that I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on, is TAMS. Mm. The minister rolled over 80 million into TAMS this year, which was, it was definitely needed. We'd seen huge backlogs occur. But I would be fearful that without certainty around TAMS, that we'd see a huge sort of push from dairy farmers in particular, because there's no certainty going forward on whether milking equipment is going to be included. And you're going to see a lot of investment needed at farm level. I know we've discussed it on previous ones on soil water and that, but to me, the TAMS one is probably one that a lot of farmers will be looking to see what exactly is put towards the budget.
You mentioned TAMS, Darren, and obviously farmers are looking at another wave of investment given the conditions within the draft nitrates action programme. Am I picking up in the wind that there may be some flexibility around that 15th of September spreading date?
Yeah, there is talk on that, Justin, like, and there's talk of maybe there's, we'll have a longer lead-in process, that it mightn't just come, it mightn't be as maybe as immediate as what we expect. And look at anything around that, Justin, I think any flexibilities are required around that, because we do, like, if we talk around the whole thing around the ammonia, there is a longer lead-in period. We're looking out into 2027 before existing tanks have to be covered. I think a lot of farmers that are sort of at a pinch point in a slurry, they're looking for a lead-in period of 3 to 5 years, say, before there's going to be any changes. Because, look, we're talking about this in a perfect year. I was on a farm on Monday, and he'd sucked the cows housed this time last year for 3 weeks. The other side of things is, say, slurry moving across the tillage farms. Like, I know we have to look at, say, the slurry being in as an environmental measure, but, Ginny, we need to move slowly on this and not just have a knee-jerk sort of change.
Good farmers' time, because many of them are only really finished building development projects, which were obviously done in line with the other. Adam, I want to come back to you, because Darren's talking there about, he mentioned higher fertilizer prices. We had a brief chat there around your budgets that you have in this week's paper for winter finishing. If you were a winter finisher going out now to buy cattle in the hope of selling them February, March, April next year, you'd want to have your big boy pants on in terms of bravery.
Absolutely, Justin. Winter finishing, it's been a precarious business for the last 5 or 6 years. And look, the premiums aren't in winter finishing, and we do budgets and we try and we'll say, you know, show farmers in terms of what beef prices require. But at the moment, you're looking at somewhere north of €5. If you were to include €100 margin on a bullock to finish them out of the shed next March, you're looking at €5.29 a kilo. Add in fixed costs into that, you're up at €5.40 a kilo.
Ah, but Adam, here we have to. You're not in the real world now. Come on.
That's the real world. Those figures, those 500, that 550 kilo bullock, I'll go down through it. It's 260 a kilo. That's what Marpin's data showed us last week. That's the average. That's the top third of bullocks. Now I'm working on good Charlie or Limousine bullocks. They're 550 kilos, 1430 he's coming in at. You graze them out for a month, you probably won't get them out for a month. You'll have actually higher cost than this, because it's getting into the end of September, so you won't be out for a month. €40, silage 155, meal 250. You're coming into, if you include the purchase cost, you're into €2,000. This is real figures, real data, real cost, real money, and you divide that out by a 400 kilo carcass, and that's what's 400, what's 2000 divided by 400?
five.
That's the real world. That's what we are. Yeah.
And I think, Adam, I know we're jesting, and nobody's saying that this isn't what it deserves, but we have to be real in terms of that's a record beef price that has never been seen before, and we have to put it in that context. And also, these are a cohort of farmers that are going to see significant cuts in their cap payments, not maybe as much in 2022, but they're going to take a big hammering in 2023 with conversions, with CRIF, and the immediate flattening of eco schemes.
It's funny you mentioned cap payments, Justin, because I said this before, and it's almost as if factories are using cap payments to actually, we'll say, you know, deliver profits to their business, because the winter finishers for the last couple of years have been using cap payments to prop up that business. The winter finishing has been losing money. Now, I won't say everybody. It's the small, we'll say, finishers. The larger feedlots, the factory-aligned feedlots, the factory-owned feedlots, they're all making money. They're working off of bonuses, maybe a 20, 30 cent based on a fixed price contract, but it's the farmer that's finishing maybe the 40 or 50 cattle. They go into the factory next March and they pay for that contract.
Well, that's a key point, Adam, because a farmer goes into the market and he's going to buy his cattle, and there's three or four other lads buying cattle, but they're not all on a level playing field. There's a factory agent, there's a factory associated feedlot and whatnot, and fair play to those guys. They do the business. But again, the risk is that the farmer going out there taking the punt believes that they know something. Really, what we know is that it's the farmer taking the punt that will pay for the higher price that those contracts actually deliver.
Absolutely. And I suppose I asked the question in the paper this week is, like, what's going to happen here? If you're right in saying cap payments are going to reduce, these bigger farms are going to take a huge hit, those farms that will be carrying a high stocking rate. So that means less cap money, less support going into those farms. If they don't winter finish next year and they turn and we turn around to a grass-based model and we turn back around to seasonality, what will happen then? You have a big glut of cattle coming at the end of the year, factory crashes price then, and you have low levels coming through the winter. Factories, I think, need to be careful here, because they have all year round contracts, we'll say, signed up, so they need a supply of cattle all year round. That's our system, that's our model. But if farmers move away from winter finishing, what are the implications of that?
Adam, it's a risk too big here now. Let's call a spade a spade. A guy going out investing in 150 cattle, say, even 50 cattle, two doubles, not a big number of cattle. What you're saying there, 2,000 euros a head, that's 100,000 euros he is putting out there. To what?
To lose, we'll say, you know, between 5,000 and 10,000 at current beef prices. If we don't get that premium of we'll say up at 5 euros, north of 5 euros a kilo, that's what it is. And that loss is made up, as I said, of support payments.
But Adam, this doesn't work. And I know you're putting the risk of seasonal supply, but all year round supply doesn't work in a market where at the highest cost of point of production cost, you have the lowest price. We see farmers killing cattle off grass today, and fair play to them, they're getting a strong price for them. But it's about 30, 40 cent a kilo higher than the farmers that killed cattle last February and March after incurring 120 or 30 day high cost feeding period.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's not that farmers haven't tried to get that premium. You know, I know farmers who have went into factories and they seem to be getting enough cattle without, you know, nailing their nail to the mast, or without doing anything for farmers in terms of contracts. They're getting enough cattle without doing that. I don't know, will that continue in light of what's going to happen as regards supports? I'm not too sure. And look, around that ring, Justin, to be honest, every year it's getting into the bigger and bigger guys all the time that are at that winter finish and that are able to go into a factory and say, I'm supplying you 30 cattle a week. I need a premium here of 20 or 30 cent on top of everybody else, and they have the power to do that. And it's unfortunate, because you have less and less people around a ring then, and I think that'll filter down in time.
Where just, Adam, bring us up to date. Where's the beef trade at the minute? How's the winning trade looking?
Look, we're pretty good. Beef trade is holding pretty steady. Kilwood actually went up last week, up by 1,500 head, up to 36,000. And when you see price staying steady and a kill going up, that's always a good sign of the trade. Factory are actively looking for cattle, ringing farmers, looking for cattle, we'll say, for killing tomorrow, for example. Very, very quickly, heifer kill went up, cow kill also went up. Young bull is continuing to decline, down to 1,400 head last week, which is a massive decline. Weanling trade, again, very, very good. 3 euros a kilo, Justin, there. You'd wonder, maybe in terms of budgets, in terms of where those weanlings are going. Some of them going north. Store cattle as well. A very big sale of Elfin in heifers this week. 3 euros a kilo was common across the board for 500 kilos. Some of them going for breeding. Some of them going for further feeding. But it's all very positive at the moment.
But surely I'm not hearing Adam Woods tell me that weanlings are too dear.
No, absolutely not. We need every penny of that we're getting. And absolutely, in terms of that top quality weanling, they need to be, we'll say, rewarded for that quality.
I suppose your real aim is to get it back at the end of the line. There's no point in having a beef system where one farmer has to lose for the other one to, to win. Darren, I just want to come to you quickly before we wrap up. 10 million euro soil sampling scheme. What's behind it? What's it about?
Yeah, Justin, look, this was, I suppose, it was announced in last year's budget and it's coming to fruition now. Essentially, there's three components. One is to develop a baseline of soil carbon across the country. The other is to see and develop, I suppose, maybe a better representation of soil fertility levels in regards to pH, P and K. The last one, I don't know a huge amount, Justin, to be honest. It's around an E. coli assessment at farm level. I have to delve a bit deeper into that. The crux of it is the department are paying for the samples. It's a voluntary scheme. So just say yourself, myself and Adam put in our applications. If it's oversubscribed, it'll be taken on. They want to have a good geographical spread. They want to have, say, the systems across representation. And then the third component that will come into it is then on the timing of application. So what I'd be saying to anyone is, if you're interested in it, the open day is next Monday, the 27th. Get your application in earlier, have your agent prime to do it. There'll be a maximum of 16 samples per farm, or and a sample has to be taken every 4 hectares. So I suppose that's where it's the overarching, or I suppose the quick details around it. To me, if you're getting soil samples taken or want soil samples, Justin, it's a no-brainer to put your name in for this.
Okay. Just when Darren mentioned samples, I just want to add, Justin, we've said it for a couple of weeks now, but BEEP samples, there are two labs who aren't, we'll say, taking in, we'll say, fecal samples as part of the BEEP, we'll say, scheme. That's Oldcastle Labs and Elfin, we'll say, labs in Roscommon. There are six or seven labs there approved, but it has to be in by the 1st of October. Very important that the farmers get those fecal samples in before the 1st of October and make sure that the lab that you're sending them will actually process the samples.
Adam, before we just jump ship, there's a lot of challenging stories in this week's paper around Minister and Taoiseach moving and cap and cow numbers and whatnot, and fertiliser prices and gas prices rising. But you have a lovely little story in the Pedigree supplement there, and a lovely video actually as well, about two stalwarts in the breeding industry, and lots of yarns and good stories and feel-good stories in it.
There's some days, Justin, this job, it doesn't feel like a job. And last Saturday was one of those days where I went out to these pair of boys, Melvin and Selby Lang, living just outside Carrigallen in tough country. I know it well, but spent 3 hours, and you might say, geez, 3 hours, that wasn't very efficient. But in terms of listening to stories and yarns and crack at a kitchen table, drinking tea, eating bread, about going back to the 1950s, bringing bulls to the RDS, walking cows to bulls, just a whole side of the industry that I maybe wasn't familiar with, and in terms of the passion and the enthusiasm that these two boys had, as you said, there's a video there of Melvin making a halter. He talked about walking cows to bulls, and he said there was no lad there with a phone either checking the stars on the bull, and we got on the best. And that just sort of summed up the visit in terms of the little quips that he had. But yeah, a lovely story in the Pedigree section this week. And look, there's some of them in every county. I just hit on one of them last week.
And it's great to see Shane Murphy back up on Balmoral Show for the livestock judging up there. He'll have that in the paper next week.
Absolutely. There's a great energy up there. You know, crowds might be small, but geez, it's absolutely brilliant for that show and fraternity to be back in a ring again. The smell of smoke, or soap, smell of soap, and the noise of dryers up there all week. It's great to have that back.
Yeah, of course, they're smoking outside at the door. ladies and gentlemen, that brings our Farm Tech Talks to a wrap this week. Jack Kennedy will be back in the hot chair again next week. Once again, a big thank you to our sponsor, Dornier, the European Milk Forum, and Grassland Agro. Again, ladies and gentlemen, get your questions in to us, Farm Tech Talk at farmersjournal.ie, and you can text or WhatsApp us on 086 836 6465. Big thank you to you, Adam. Thanks to Darren again, imparting a lot of useful knowledge there. Until next week, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe, stay farming.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.